Excuse me.
Committee on Environment and Natural Resources will come to order. Today's primary purpose is to the assembly of the Senate's proposed game and fish bill. And what we're going to do with that is we've got a delete all amendment that we'll pass out to the public in a moment. And we will work off of that. We will, and then when that is finished, we will lay over Senate File 1184, Senator Scogin's bill, for inclusion in the omnibus policy bill, which we will be doing tomorrow.
She'll be in here.
And then after that, we will pass out a delete all for the proposed omnibus policy bill for tomorrow. And we'll have council go through that. So people will know what is being proposed to be in the policy bill for tomorrow, and people have a chance to react and do amendments if they so choose. And then tomorrow we will meet for the purpose of marking up the delete all amendment that we will review today. That will include the game and fish bill that we're working on this morning or this afternoon. Through the markup process, we're not going to be taking testimony unless there is a entirely new and separate issue that really the committee needs information on. All of these bills have been thoroughly vetted. No one has been excluded from a discussion on any of these bills, and so I think the committee is fully informed. On the agenda, you also will see Senate File 2040. The reason we put Senate File 2040 on the agenda for today, and it will be on the agenda for tomorrow as well, is because of certain issues that might crop up that involve a different committee that needs to hear it, primarily the State and Local Government Committee. There's lots of discussion surrounding rulemaking, requiring local governments to do this or that. And so time is too short for the entire omnibus policy bill to go through state and local government or any other relevant committee that might, for any issues that might come up. So I put this bill on the agenda so that we have a safety valve that if the committee so desires, if we agree with the policy, we can put that provision on that provision or provisions as we go through the bills onto the Senate File 2040, and that can then be reviewed by the state and local government committee at some point. Now, yes, state and local government is subject to the same deadlines as us. However, there's always possibilities that state and local government might meet for informational purposes, it'd be good to have a safety valve. It may not work in the end, but at least we can try this option should we run into issues where, God, we really want to do this, but we don't have time for it to go through state and local government. If we have time, there's a bill that that was on my agenda for this session. I don't think it's controversial, but I'd like the committee to take a look at it, and if it's okay with them, we can dispose of it the proper way. Any questions?
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Fredrickson.
I noticed a provision in here that'll trigger this bill going to Rules Committee. Are you anticipating taking it to Rules?
Which provision is that?
That's the legislators appointed to the citizen oversight subcommittees. Mm-hmm. Whenever there's legislators appointed to a committee, I believe it needs to go to Rules.
What's the rule on that, Mr. Knopf?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fredrickson, the rule actually states if you create a new advisory committee or council and that legislative members are appointed to it, it has to make two stops in state and local government operations and then also in rules and administration. This technically would not fit, but I think most people would say it still ought to go there. There's a bill traveling separately, Senator Scogin's bill. It's been sent to I can't remember if it was heard or not to state and local government, the Game and Fish Oversight Committee.
1360. I believe that's going to be heard tonight.
Yes. It'll be heard tonight in state and local government operations. The question is, and then will that bill be probably referred to rules and administration? So the question is whether you could keep it in here or just have it travel separate. I mean, you could have it travel separate, keep it in here with the thought that if this, when this bill leaves the committee, that language is still in there, that it would have, you know, that at some point you'd have to take it out if that bill doesn't fails down the road. So that's an option for you to keep it in, but it is traveling separately as you've got other pieces that are too. That.
If there aren't any other questions, let's move to Senate File 1184. The members should have the A2 delete all.
I would move that.
And Senator Scogin will move the A2, and why don't we distribute that to the public as well if we haven't done that already. What's the normal procedure? Do we normally adopt the delete all and then go through it, or?
Well, Mr. Chairman, at this stage, since this bill has already been heard and amended in committee, it might be best to go through it before the committee adopts it.
Okay.
And Mr. Chairman, maybe I can point out too that and I think you alluded to this earlier, that this will be amended into the Game and Fish bill, and the plan is for this would be Article 3 of the omnibus bill. And also, when the other articles are coming up, we'll look at them article by article today, and then they'll be put into a delete everything amendment tomorrow.
Okay. All right. Mr. Knopf, would you like to go through the A2 for us?
Sure, Mr. Chair. The first section you see is what was discussed yesterday, but except it's just a small part of it out of the aquatic farm license. It's that last paragraph that said that if the water body was protected from waterfall stamp proceeds, then it couldn't be licensed. So it's basically only that part of Senate File 2217, the chairman's bill from yesterday. Section 2 was in the Game and Fish Bill. It was an amendment that was offered to the Game and Fish Bill before it was laid on the table, dealing with game birds. Section 3 was in the original Senate File 1184, and immediately released from the water. And then the section that Senator Fredrickson was talking about, Section 4, that's the Game and Fish Oversight Committee, putting the legislative members on, but of course they are non-voting and not eligible for per diem. Section 5, this is from Senator Parisot's bill, and you'll see a later section adding the land description later. That's the Vermilion Highlands Wildlife Management Area. That was in Senator Parisot's Senate File 711. Section 6, that was in the original department's Game and Fish Bill, Senate File 1184. Section 7, this was Senator Bach's amendment the other day. To his bill, I think it was 1132, and that's dealing with the possession requirement for a license that was adopted to that bill and then laid over. Section 8 deals with replacement licenses, and that was in the original Game and Fish Bill, Senate File 1184 from the department. Section 9. This was from Senator Saxhog's bill, Senate File 919, and deals with the license period. What it does is it changes the license period for fishing and the angling portion of the sporting license and those other dark house and fish house licenses to May 1st through April 30th for the license year. This was heard by the committee and set aside earlier this session. Section 10, that was from the original Game and Fish Bill of Department 1184, dealing with taking animals while privileges are suspended. Section 11, This is getting into that apprentice hunter validation we heard when the committee heard the discussion earlier on 1184. This is again from the department's bill on this. And then also section 12, that's a technical amendment on 6.29 dealing with the 3D-er. That was again part of 1184. So section 13 was also part of 1184, and section 14, those were, as I think Mr. Bogus explained, they're kind of technical in that they don't really prohibit these things anymore. Anyways, section 15, that was from Senator Scogin's bill dealing with, I think it was 1318, dealing with the military personnel on the and the shooting and exercise portion of the firearm safety course.
How do you remember these Senate file numbers?
Well, Mr. Chairman, exactly. I have a cheat sheet next.
Oh, okay.
You probably had to do a whole lot of work on each of them.
Mr. Chairman, the only thing I have to do is I have to remember which bill it came from.
Okay. All right.
That's
honestly,
the memory part, but the actual number I have written down next to me.
I honestly wouldn't be surprised if you... I wouldn't be surprised if you had them memorized.
A few of them, maybe, but not all of them. Mr. Chairman, Section 16, the firearm safety certificate required. That's, again, that apprentice provision that was in the original bill. Original department bill. Same with Section 17. That's the apprentice hunter thing. Section 18 was from Senator Saxog, Senate File 919. That's the scopes on muzzleloaders provision that was heard by the committee earlier and set aside. Section 19 is a provision that was in the original Senate File 1184, the agency bill. Also, Section 20 was, this is again the cleanup of that all deer license, and they're basically going to have it prescribed by the commissioner and how that works with the various hunting seasons. Section 21, that's the smokeless gunpowder provision. That was against Senator Scogin's provision, Senate File 1462. Section 22, this is from the bill we heard yesterday, the chairman's bill, dealing with the bear hunting special permit, Senate File 2217, and it's a modified version based on the way the committee amended it yesterday. Section 23, that's that license, or the information on the license identification number, part of the original bill of the departments, giving that window of time to continue to use the old driver's license number. Section 24, this is from the original bill of the agency also on improving habitat prescribing regulations. Section 25 is also from the original bill dealing with structures left on ice. Section 26, this is also from Senator Bach's bill that was heard the other day. This is the Senate File 1132 on the angling season for trout. Now, sections 27, 28, 29, and 30 are from Senator Bach's bill earlier this session that was heard Senate File 1131 dealing with the Lake Superior commercial fishing. It also has gone, this bill has gone through state and local government, as I understand. And what this does, It includes it, but there's a couple of changes. On 13.3, you will see that it's only valid until September 30th, 2012. The Minnesota 2, you look on 13.7, in 2010, they only have 2 years. For the Minnesota 3 category on 13.6, that begins in 2007, but it would expire when it would give the legislature... It would require them to come back to the legislature to continue this process beyond 2012. And also...
It's a sunset to take
a
look at how it's working.
And on 13.12, there's an additional sentence in there that says the commissioner shall establish slot limits for fish taken under this section. And then Section 31, that's again from Senator Parisot's Senate File 711. And this is basically the land area, because this is uncodified. You'll see the statutory quotation there, but that's just to it's a note to the reviser to code the history of that underneath the statute, even though this language will not appear in the statutes. Section 32, this is attached to the this was the reason, and this part has been through state and local government. This is attached to the provisions in Senator Bach's commercial fishing bill. It deals with the ability to amend the rules to reflect those provisions. Section 33, this is the Access to Minnesota Outdoors Plan. This was Senator Paris, or excuse me, Senator Wergen's bill. Senate File 283, I think Senator Pariseau also had a bill related to this. Mm-hmm. But this was as the committee amended it when it was in committee, and it reflects those amendments to make it basically a one-time plan and requiring a report back to the legislature to enact the plan. Section 34 is new. Mr. Chairman, you may want to explain Section 34.
This is the, and I have spoken to members about this, so that no one is surprised. We did not have time to raise this issue through legislation, but it relates to cormorants and the situation that we are dealing with cormorants on Lake of the Woods, similar to that which we were dealing with on Leech Lake. And remember Leech Lake, we authorized DNR to do a shoot of cormorants culling the population because they were devastating walleyes on Leech Lake. Well, it actually turns out that there are twice as many cormorants on Lake of the Woods than there were on Leech Lake. Despite the fact that there are complications in dealing with Lake of the Woods because you've got part of it is in Canada and there are also some tribal issues, nonetheless, we need to at least move this issue forward a little bit and understand what these cormorants are eating. Maybe there's a lot of them. They just eat bullheads, and great. But if they're eating a lot of perch and if they're eating a lot of walleye, then we need to know that. And so part of the concern from the department when I asked them about this was that there's kind of falls down on the food chain with respect to cost, and so that's why we've got in this provision the cost shall be paid for by the local units of government associated with this study. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Has the study with Leech Lake proven to be successful? I mean, has there been some results? I guess it's just from my information.
It's my understanding, yes.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. But, again, this doesn't go as far as any type of shoot. We're not promoting that. We want to know what's going on.
And, Mr. Chairman, then you have the two repealers. These were part of the original department bill. The first one repeals a fish buyer's license. Again, the DNR, I think, described that earlier as something that they don't do anymore or don't want to do anymore. And the 97C.365, that deals with the prohibiting spears while angling in a fish house or dark house. And again, this is just more technical. There were changes made last year to allow somebody to angle while spearing. And this would basically take away that current prohibition on the possession of the spear. Again, it was part of the original department bill. And that's the end of the delete everything amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Discussion. Senator Pariseau.
Mr. Chairman, I think I mentioned one item to you this morning that you said probably was in here, but I don't see it, and that's the lifetime license for trappers?
Yes, right.
That would be obvious for this bill instead of for the other one.
Remember, we had put that in the Senate Finance Bill, the Environment Finance Bill, because there was at least from what I understand, there was a slight cost associated with it, and since it dealt with a license fee, it was in the Finance Bill. I have no problem with it being in the bill. If we want to talk about that, to include it for tomorrow, that's fine. Maybe we should get some advice from Senator Anderson, whether that'd be all right with her.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that it was that as far as because DNR told us how they would be able to handle it, and it was going to be added to. It wasn't going to be for an extra fee, but it would be part of the licenses that they're already required to buy because trappers are required to buy two,
okay,
a trapping license and a small game.
Okay.
So they would be able to get either of those. I think they could get it either with angling or with the small game.
Yeah. I don't have a problem putting that in.
But maybe the fee was changed.
If you want to draft the amendment, And if I would just request that you have a conversation with Senator Anderson about it. But I have no problem putting that in. Senator Sharon.
Mr. Chair, would you advise me as to when it is that you would be entertaining amendments for this?
Senator Sharon, we can take amendments on this, on the game and fish issues today, now.
Before we pass the delete all, delete all, or after?
I don't think it matters. If you want to do it before we pass the delete all, that's fine, too. You'll also have another crack at the game and fish portion tomorrow as well, because that will be part of the an article of the whole bill.
So, Mr. Chair, does that mean that if I am unsuccessful with the amendment today, that I'll have another crack at it again tomorrow?
Senator Sharon?
Yes. Probably.
I think so, yes.
Oh, really?
Mr. Chair.
I'm not sure if you can. I think you would have to rework it a little bit. But in general, you'd have another crack at the issue, certainly.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, you should go ahead and be the guinea pig for the first one on this.
I feel like I've been that a lot this year.
Set the tone here for us.
Would you like me to proceed then with
If you
with
have an amendment, right, feel free.
I do have
now
an amendment.
Now is the proper time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you want me to simply do that from here?
Yes.
We've talked about this, and I mentioned this earlier in the week as well. This amendment would add into this bill the language that was passed and for consideration related to the remote, the use of a remote control device for changing the calls on a calling box, I guess you would call it. I call it the squawk box, but that's not its official name. And if this, it was presented in this committee and passed for consideration. This, I think, I would like to back up and say, quite frankly, I am not a person that you would typically see promoting lots of things about hunting, because I am a real protector of animal life. The reason that I was willing to open the door for the hunters on this is because there's confusion in the permitting process. Many believe this is an already legal process, but the language is not clear about that in terms of and what is illegal, what's intended at least to be illegal statutes are interactive communications. So if you remember when this bill was presented, it was about an already legal device that can be put out into an area where hunting is occurring, and that the hunter can be some distance away from that and change the call or change the volume from a remote control. And that's all that remote control piece does. So I really think that it's an already allowable calling system. It simply allows some convenience for the hunter. And as long as it's already legal, I guess I don't find difficulty in allowing the hunter to have something that creates some more convenience in the process of hunting. And I think it clears up some confusion for those who are in the permitting process. And I would also remind the committee that the DNR, Ed Bosnes, has spoken, indicating that they were not in opposition to this, that it was not in conflict with the goals of that section of the statute. So with that, I think the amendment has probably been distributed, and I can move the amendment if that's the proper procedure at this point.
So Senator Sharon will move the A3. The committee, it's certainly up to the committee, but I'm not comfortable with this provision at this time. In my opinion, introducing a remote controlled animal noise collar is changes the hunt. And a lot of people think that this is probably only deal with coyotes, but this applies to all hunting. And I guess I'm a little concerned without investigating this issue a whole lot more, that this doesn't alter alter the hunt and make it a lot easier for people to use technology to shoot the animal. And I think where, for me, where I draw the line is, does it change the hunt? And I think it does. I'm concerned about technology. Remember, we had this whole discussion about remote, and we had this whole discussion about internet hunting. I don't think this is comes close to that, but it still concerns me that we're using technology to change the type of the hunt. And this is, there are a lot of different technologies out there that can make it a heck of a lot easier for people to call in. To call in an animal. For example, you know, under this bill, you'd be able to have a remote caller 100 yards out and manipulate it from there.
Two-way.
And you could manipulate between, you know, turkey, coyote, or whatever species you happen to have on that remote control device, and call them in 100 yards out. Animal doesn't get your scent because you're 100 yards away, and boom, you can take the shot. So that's why I'm uncomfortable with it.
Mr. Chair, I would say that this already can happen under the legal use of this system, because the caller can be placed out 100 yards or whatever distance from the person can retreat. And what changes is the ability to change it from a remote place. And so I think that that's what, that essential piece of it is what, if it's an already allowable use for the caller, that the that this is about the remote control system that is the primary interest. Well,
remember, there's a reason why you want the remote control. You're trying to control that box, either by turning it off so you don't have to walk out there and turn it off, either by switching the type of call, changing the batteries. I mean, you can do a whole lot more manipulation under your bill than you can with current law. And I guess I'm not so sure I support current law either.
That may be the case.
Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, and also Senator Sharon, listening to the discussion, I think the intent is to have this apply to coyotes, essentially, unprotected animals. And Mr. Chairman, would it be a little more acceptable to you if we would specifically say that, add to on line 1.7, for taking unprotected animals?
Only slightly, but I'm personally still against it.
Mr. Chairman, I understand that.
Yeah. I mean, I agree that we need to do more predator management. We have to. It's clear. But, when you introduce new technologies and you end up managing them in a species in a certain way, like, you know, there's far fewer of them and you want more, or you want more and you want far fewer of them, you need to have that ability to do that, and it's going to be a lot harder to take away this technology than introducing it. So I think we really need to approach predator management with our eyes much wider open than just doing this.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
if you want to do an amendment to the amendment,
Mr. Chairman,
you can.
I would move on the A3 amendment, line 7, before the period, insert for taking unprotected animals.
Okay. On the amendment to the amendment, Senator Sharon?
Yes.
Senator Parasol?
Mr. Chairman, they call for more than coyote. They call for fox as well and some other animals, and I don't know. And this technology is certainly available out there, and they can probably use it.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Without a statutory allowance, as far as I'm concerned, you know. But I'm not sure exactly which technology you're talking about, because I don't do the calling, but. But they do call for more than coyote,
and absolutely.
So it's legitimate.
And that's my issue, Senator Sharon.
Senator Fredrickson, if this language is added, is it limiting what's already allowable?
Ms. Chairman, Senator Sharon, I would like some clarification of what is allowable now. I thought there's at least some ambiguity about it.
Mr. Knopf.
Well, Mr. Chairman, what's allowable now is you can get a special permit. If you there's a subdivision 2 that's right above this in the statutes. And I'll just read, a person may not use radio, but it's broader than just this type of radio equipment. It's any radio. It also would be able to be used for two-way radios, too, for communication. A person may not use radio equipment to take unprotected wild animals without a permit. The commissioner may issue a permit to take unprotected animals with radio equipment. The commissioner shall cancel the permit upon receiving a valid complaint, and so on. So there is a permit under current law that allows you to take unprotected animals with radio equipment, but it's broader than just this type of radio. It's any radio equipment. What this would do is provide another would provide an exception that even from the permit requirement for those using a remote control animal noise caller, they wouldn't even need to have the permit at that point.
Maybe I'd be more inclined to take a look at the standards for issuing a permit. I think you maybe indicated that that's where this issue stemmed from. Someone had a hard time getting a permit.
There was inconsistency in the permitting process. Yeah. Many didn't think they needed a permit because the law that's being referred to related to interactive communication, so walkie-talkie communication, cellular phones, and not one-way communication, which this is. It's a remote control. Okay. So there were differences in the permitting. Mm-hmm. So those who wanted to be absolutely clear would seek a permit. Some would get a permit some places because it was allowable, interpreted as being allowable, and others it was interpreted as not allowable. So this language was intended to make certain that it was clear that the use of the remote control device was allowed. And would you be clear that it is this language makes it that with this language that Senator Fredrickson is adding, would that limit what's currently allowed?
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sharon, not for the general, the permit in subdivision 2 would still be available for any radio equipment. This would limit just this exception for the remote control where they don't have to have a permit. So it would just limit the exception here for the person who wanted to use one of these without a permit.
On the Fredrickson amendment to the amendment, Senator Dibble, did you have something on that?
No.
Okay. On the Fredrickson Senate amendment to the amendment, everyone understand it? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. So on the Sharon A3, did you, Senator Dibble?
Mr. Chair. While I don't hold a current hunting license, I have hunted more frequently than Governor Romney has. So. So with that qualification, I actually don't see the big deal. I think this is something that clarifies, as Senator Sharon explained, that something that's currently permitted can be used that has a slightly different technology. You can set up a little animal caller and turn it on and walk away, and then you have to come back and change the volume or turn it off, or you can have a wire connected to it and control it that way. This just simply allows it to be controlled by a wireless mechanism, and so I just don't think it's a huge change. I had significant concerns, if you recall. I quizzed her pretty closely because I wasn't understanding what was being proposed during the hearing, and once I understood, I agreed that it was probably advisable. So I have no big concerns with this amendment. I think it's fine.
Further discussion on the A3. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. Further discussion on the A2. The lead off.
So, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
I have an amendment, the A5.
I Okay, on the A5, Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, this is just establishes the pull on a bowl that meeting or exceeding 30 pounds at or below will draw. The Bow Hunters Association, I think, is one of this. It's based on some change in technology that you don't have to have as in the bow hunt. I talked with the DNR, and they're fine with it.
What's the current draw weight?
Don't ask me.
Probably doesn't have one in there.
Is it 50?
Doesn't have one in there.
Probably about 50?
I think it's 50.
Is it 40?
40.
40?
40. So primarily younger girls mm-hmm. could do this. Not to say that boys don't have a hard time with 40 pounds either. Are you aware that this affects impact on the deer and lethality?
Sure.
Senator Olson?
I presume the aim is to do the same thing with it, regardless of the draw.
Well, I mean, the draw, you know, the poundage refers to, you know, how fast you're pushing it. So that affects distance. It can affect accuracy. It can affect lethality. So I'm just wondering if you knew about it. Yeah, affect the kill. Okay. Senator Stump.
Sure. I'm not sure about that. I think the way bows are constructed now, we used to have straight bows, and then we had recoil or curved bows. Half curve, full curve, and then now they have pulleys on them. And so even though you're pulling back at a lesser poundage, the impact on release can be equal to the same poundage of a recurve or a straight bow. And so, I'd be interested to hear from somebody who's what the ratio is on that, but I think that was the whole purpose of them making those kinds of bows, is that if you're going to pull back on a straight bow or a recurve bow and hold it for any length of time, you pretty soon you start shaking, whereas these bows you can pull back and then the pressure is very minimal, and you can, you know, if your shot isn't good, you can wait. Maybe the deer comes out in the open, and then shoot. So, I think the science of it is one that would probably support less of a draw, and I don't know if the department has any information on that or not, but.
Senator Stumpf, are you asking somebody from the department to come forward?
I'm certainly not an expert, but I know.
Bow hunter back there?
I know the.
I'm going to ask Mr. Boggess to come up here and see if he can shed some light on his ability to draw at 40 or 30 pounds.
Mr. Boggess, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I was just sitting back with the commissioner, and he's saying we need an expert bow hunter. I am a bow hunter, but I wouldn't classify myself as an expert. But to answer Senator Stumpf's question, it's certainly true that the modern or even the older compound bows reach their peak draw weight prior to full draw, so that as you're pulling back, you hit the peak, and then the farther you pull, when you get it all the way back, you're holding less poundage than you were at that peak point, but you still have to pull it through that, and that is actually what delivers the power of the bow, is that peak weight. It's just that the pulleys flip over, and so you're holding less weight once you're at full draw. So, and the way this is worded is similar to our current rule, which says it has to meet that minimum at or before full draw. So that minimum is still important to determining how much energy that bow is going to deliver. The amount that you're actually holding at full draw can vary from 100% of that weight with a recurve bow or a straight bow to maybe 70% let off of that peak weight or even more with some of the modern compound bows. So, the department has identified this issue as a barrier to youth and women getting into bow hunting. We've looked at what some other states have done, and Wisconsin, for example, has a 30-pound minimum, and we do believe 30 pounds is sufficient to adequately kill a deer. So we don't have an issue with this. With Senator Olson's amendment.
Okay. Any further questions for Mr. Bogus?
Mr. Chairman, I would move to amend 1184.
Members, we have the A5 amendment before us. Further discussion on that amendment? Hearing no further discussion, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion carries and the amendment's adopted. Further discussion on 1184. Any further amendments?
Move it as an article.
Senator Scogin, perhaps since there's no more amendments or discussion, you should move to include this as an amendment to the omnibus bill.
I would like to, Mr. Chair, and I would also at this time like to thank Mary Ann, Mary Carol, and Greg for their help, not only putting this bill together, but also when I had a chance to sit at the head of the table. I appreciate everything they did for me. And at this time, I would like to move Senate File 1184 as amended to be laid on the table and possibly be included in the omnibus Environment and Natural Resources Bill.
Members, you've heard Senator Scogin's motion to include this as an article in the omnibus bill. Senator Stump, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one quick question, and I apologize if you've already covered it. And it has to do with Section 34. I'm just wondering how the department is going to do a dietary study of the cormorants on Lake of the Woods.
Senator Stumpf, that was something that Senator Chaudhry kind of last minute decided to include in this in regards to what they had done in their other study, and cormorants apparently are a problem, or some people perceive them to be a problem up on Lake of the Woods. He wants to find out what they eat and why they eat it and when they eat it, and he did want the local units of government to pay for that study, but it is Senator Chaudhry's project.
Mr. Chairman, I think all you have to do is ask some of the people up there. They could tell you what they eat. They're eating our walleyes. That's what they're eating.
That's the reason they got
Senator Scogin.
I won't argue with you on that, but Senator Chaudhry would like to be sure.
Senator Scogin has moved that Senate File 1184 as amended be recommended for inclusion, possible inclusion in the omnibus bill and laid on the table. Further discussion? Hearing no further discussion, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries and the bill's laid on the table.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Scogin.
Thank you, committee.
Member staff are distributing some articles for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill that will be taking us tomorrow. So this will be an informational session for members of the committee to become more familiar with these articles. I believe everything in these articles, with only one or two exceptions, has been before the committee before. And will be coming to us as recommendations from the chair. Ms. Baker, do you want to start?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I think what we'll do is pass them out one article at a time so that you don't get a massive array of papers, and then either Greg or I, whoever worked on the article, will just briefly go through and let you know what's included. And, Mr. Chair, would you rather wait? Have me wait, or would you like me to go ahead?
Stand on there looking at us.
They don't have to talk
down at us. That's not good.
Yeah. Is that what you want? I should
have.
Oh,
oh, oh.
Knives or
yes,
gun?
Yes, yes, yes.
Don't we have any, some cocky or public?
Yeah, we have.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot they made bullets.
Yeah, maybe. There aren't enough.
If there aren't enough copies, staff is making more copies. So, Ms. Baker, why don't you start?
Article 1 is just a collection of miscellaneous natural resources bills and technical bills from the DNR that we heard in committee. The first one, the Cuyuna Country State Recreation Area, is a center coring bill that simply Senate File 1176, and it creates a citizens advisory group for the Cuyuna Country State Recreation Area. One other section in this article was also in that bill, and that is Section 5 on page 3, which just states that a state park permit is not required for parking at Croft Mine Historical Park and Portsmouth Mine Lake Overlook in the Cuyuna County State Recreation Area. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that right, but he's not here. Section 2 of Article 1 is a combination of two bills, one authored by Senator Frederickson and one Senator Coobley, that adds trail designations to the Minnesota River Trail. Section 3 and Section 4 are parts of Senate File 1312, which is the DNR technical bill authored by Senator Chaudhry. And most of the sections that came out of that technical bill were modifying water supply plans. The one on Section 4, however, is a correction of a military personnel on leave, just a technical change. And Section 6 and 7 together are from Senator Scogin's Shoreland Development Bill, Senate File 961, regarding existing resorts. Sections 8 is another piece of the DNR technical bill modifying the water supply plan requirements. Section 9 is from a bill from Senator Sieve in Senate File 728, which is kind of a cleanup of contested case hearing technicalities, publication notices for the DNR. Section 10 was discussed yesterday in committee, Senate File 1612, Senator Anderson. Section 11 is, again, more planning modification details in the DNR technical bill. And Section 12 is more of the same. On the back page, there are a few uncodified portions. Section 13 requires the Commissioner of Natural Resources to initiate rulemaking to update the standards for aquatic plant management permit issuance. Section 14 requires the Commissioner of Natural Resources to consider a pilot project for controlling Eurasian water millfall on Green Lake. Section 15 requires the Commissioner of Natural Resources to begin rulemaking to update the minimum shoreland standards and to use as a basis the alternative shoreland management standards developed from the Shoreland Standards Update Advisory Committee. The repealer simply repeals the previous
military personnel statute that you'll find on section 4. There was just so many changes that they repealed it and just did it over. And that should be the end of Article 1.
Questions for Ms. Baker?
You want to amend it?
Excuse me? Now we can go to Article 2. Ready?
Do we have Article 2?
Ready.
Gotta get the
amendment. Hold on.
Okay, Ms. Baker, why don't you start going through Article 2?
Mr. Chair and members, Article 2 is where we compiled bills that we heard on that involved off-highway vehicles, and primarily three bills or portions of them were included. The first section comes from Senate File 1538, which is Senator Chaudhry's off-highway vehicle bill, and it does have a few changes in there. I'll point out a couple that stick out. On page 1, line 18, paragraph B, the commissioner shall, now it's may. So there are a few tweaks like that. There's also a clause added that determinations of the commissioner under this section are exempt from rulemaking. Section 2 is also part of that same bill, Senator Chaudhry's bill. And Section 3 also covers, Section 2 is setting up the off-highway vehicle safety and conservation program. Section 3 is also from Senator Chaudhry's Bill 1538, which changes fees for registration of all-terrain vehicles. The next several sections, Section 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 4 through 8 are from Senator Frederickson's Senate File 739, which makes various modifications to ATV rules or statutes. Section 9, again, is from Senator Chaudhry's Senate File 1538, with a few changes. Point out a few of those. On page 6, line 5, we included snowmobiling in the list of traditional uses for a state forest traditional area. Page 6, line 9, I believe. Right. It said all-terrain vehicles. Now it's says all. There are no off-highway vehicles.
Which area is that?
That Baker? Is on page 6, line 9.
Oh, 9. Oh, right.
Okay. Section 10, then, is another section from Senator Fredrickson's Senate File 739.
Ms. Baker, while yes. you're on Section 10, that bill has been in Transportation Committee since it was here, mm-hmm. and there were a couple amendments made that were not picked up here. One was in this Section 10, and the other two were very small in Section 8.
Put those in tomorrow.
In Section 8.
Is there a section there?
No.
Okay,
no.
I'll find them. I'll find the amendments. Okay, then Section 11, the forest land off-highway vehicle use reclassification. That came, it's a portion of the bill from Senator Marty that we heard a few days ago, Senate File 1269. It doesn't include the entire bill that he brought forward, but it includes a paragraph. And the repealer, of course, I have it in file. I can't remember what it is. Do you remember?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that was in your bill. That's also dealing with the repeals, that provision for the Class 2 vehicles that was enacted last year.
Right. Okay. Thank you. And that's Article 2.
Questions from members on Article 2?
Mr. Chairman, the only issue is the off-highway vehicle safety and conservation program did pass the Senate already in the omnibus funding bill. Also, the license fee increases were in the omnibus budget bill, and they were both funded in there. They deal with kind of money issues. I didn't know if those were going to be still included here or not. Senator Chaudhry's not here, and I just don't know.
So you're just raising that.
I just want to make sure members are aware that that may be an issue, whether they're still included.
There's still a little fine-tuning.
Yeah.
Next few articles are Greg's.
Yeah. Well, I'm not quite ready yet.
Actually, because
Mr. Chairman.
No questions.
Senator Stump.
I'm still trying to digest what we are seeing here. And I probably should have been listening rather than reading, but on the off-highway vehicle issue, what is the difference between current law and what he's proposing here?
Page.
Senator Stump, which section?
Which well, sections? The sections that pertain to ATVs.
Oh, off-highway would be ATV then, huh?
And there's two classes of ATVs. There's a class one and a class two.
Senator Stump, last year we created a second class of ATVs, class two, which are those that are
over 900 pounds
to 1,600 pounds. And this changes where they are allowed to be ridden. They can now be ridden on the highway themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's the basic.
Is that the only basic, change in here?
No, there's some other changes that go along with that. Requires the use of seat belts when seat belts are provided on those, that type of ATV. Requires the use of helmets for underage. And what one potentially controversial one is in Section 10, where there was... We have an exception from essentially the open bottle law for recreation vehicles, and since at some point, because trails will use road right-of-ways for a short distance, we made a very limited exception to that in this bill. Keep in mind, it is always illegal to operate a boat or an ATV impaired, but if an ATV trail crosses a highway, and they happen to have an open bottle in that ATV somewhere, they would not be breaking the law. If they would take the ATV and drive down the road on a highway that is not part of a trail system, they would be breaking the law.
Okay. So what you're saying is that the changes in here from current law only affect the class two and where they can ride, and that one other change that you mentioned, it doesn't affect any of the authority that local road authorities have or have over
ATV use?
Senator Stumpf, it does not. It does not allow these on trunk highways. But
right.
The road authorities still have the authority to restrict all ATVs on the highways that they control. All they have to do is hold a public hearing and impose a restriction.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Parasol.
Mr. Chairman, I know that I was here when we talked about this section, but I still have some concern about it, and that is on page 2, sub 4, worker displacement prohibited. And I'm trying to figure out how the department then can certify, I believe it's on line 21, commissioner must certify to the appropriate bargaining agent that you don't have worker displacement by volunteers. And I thought that in the past it seemed to me that the purpose of the whole thing was that volunteers should be out there helping on the trails or in whatever way the volunteers have been used in the past as one of the reasons to keep their activities focused and appropriate. And so I wonder if we're cutting off our nose to spite our face here. And if anybody would like to speak to that from department or the organizations or wherever, I'd like to hear what their take on that is. So I don't think we heard a lot from them in the committee when we had this up before.
Ms. Baker, do you want to comment on it?
Mr. Chair, I don't remember hearing anything from DNR, but I'm sure they have an opinion. But I think it was mostly that there's enough work to go around for everyone was the feeling.
Possibly. Yeah. I don't recall that, I guess.
Yeah, I don't recall exactly. So that's why,
is there
if there's anybody that wants to
comment.
Anybody
from the Department of Natural Resources that would like to comment on this section? Mr. Myers, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. For the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, DNR. Subdivision 4 on page 2. Our lines 2.28 to 2.25 came from previous legislation. It's duplicative. I think if the committee wishes to strike it, it doesn't impact the program at all.
Well, Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Mayor, I don't know if it would be duplicative. It's the same language that you have for the Adopt a Park program. What it does is, so for that program, you're making sure that you're not going to displace current state employees for the Adopt a Park program. But that one is only tied to the Adopt a Park program, and this would be tied to this program. But it is modeled. I mean, I think it reads verbatim as to what the Adopt a Park program has for it right now.
Mr. Chair, members, duplicative probably was the wrong term. We don't view it as there's not going to be a conflict with what these folks are doing and what our employees are doing right now. It's two different things. So unnecessary probably is a better term. But it is cautionary language if the committee wishes to keep it.
Well, I'm not suggesting, Mr. Chairman, that we delete it. But I think about, you know, we have people, all the volunteers who want to help out are cleaning up the highways. And the question might be, why would we take jobs away from people who are doing that for a living? And so, but it doesn't matter on the highways. We're still doing it. And they even tell you when you go into a fast food joint, don't throw your stuff away. Let somebody have a job by cleaning the table and chairs. You know, so I guess there's a comparison point there in many ways. But
well, Senator,
you know, don't take a job away from a teenager who wants to work, for crying out loud.
Well, this is before us for informational reasons today, so members are familiar with it. And perhaps
it'll be interesting to see
if you need further information.
Mr. Chair, whichever the committee prefers, we can live with it or live without it.
I have no motion to make, Mr. Chairman. Just a question.
Further questions on this article?
Is this yours or mine? Well, this is a
thank
one.
You, Mr. Myers.
Mr. Chairman, we have Article 4. We did Article 3. That was the game and fish provisions that were talked about earlier. And Article 4, the...
We'll have to distribute it.
No, I think it was.
No, we've got it.
And Mr. Chairman, members should have Article 4 in front of them. This is these are all bills of Senator Saxfog's, and this is the state lands article. I don't know how much it, maybe I'll go through it fairly quickly with you, but I'll just start off by saying what it contains is really three pieces. Senate File 1119, that's actually been through several committees in the Senate. I think it's on the floor right now. Senate File 420, dealing with the firewood restrictions, it's also been through a couple of committees. And Senate File 1154, that was amended by this committee the other day. But I'll go through the section. So it's those three bills are all Senator Saxlog's bills dealing with state lands. The first section is a minimum value acquisition that was part of the original DNR bill dealing with state lands. Section 2 is also part of the original DNR bill dealing with state lands. And we had, an extensive explanation of those. I can go into more detail if somebody wants. Section 3 and Section 4, these are from Senator Saxhog, Senate File 420, and this deals with the approved firewood requirement, the ban on certain types of firewood that's not approved. This also was heard by committee and passed out of this committee. Section 5 deals with the, and again, this was part of the original lands bill. This deals with the failure to record a severed mineral interest that was discussed earlier by the department. Now Section 6 is the part that was added to Senator Saxhog's bill 1154 by this committee and deals with the acquisition of WMAs in certain wildlife management areas. Basically says that they don't have to go through that process. That was, again, but it was adopted to Senator Saxhog's bill 1154 the other day before it was laid over for possible inclusion. Section 7 deals with, and this was the contents of Senator Saxhog's bill. This was the amendment that was adopted dealing with the loop lands. And it basically, if they're within a WMA, they receive the $3 adjusted for inflation rather than the 75 cents adjusted for inflation for those loop lands that are within a WMA, both Sections 7 and 8. And that was the amendment, delete all amendment that was adopted to Senate File 1154 the other day, Senator Saxhog. And now we get into a number of sections that are all part of Senate File 1119. A number of, and I'll go through these quickly, a number of provisions that were been heard and discussed by this committee. Section 9 is the provision where they're not going to have to pay the fee that normally you pay for tax forfeited lands. Because of what these lands have gone through, as far as there will not be any claims against the state for those lands, so they don't have to pay the fee into that account. Section 10 deals with the additions to state parks that were heard by the committee. Section 11 are the deletions from state parks, and then we've got a number of land sales. These are were in the original bill. These are state lands. And these were presented by the Department of Natural Resources, Sections 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. These are all part of the original bill. Same with Section 18, Section 19, and Section 20. These were part of Senator Saxhog's bill. It was a department bill as introduced. Section 21 was also part of that, 22. Section 23 in Hennepin County. I won't describe these land sales because these have been gone over by the committee before. Section 24, 25, 26, 27, these are all surplus state lands. 28, 29, again, surplus state lands. 30, surplus, 31, 32, 33. Where you really get into, there were amendments made by the committee to the department's bill. If you'll see that on page 24, section 34. And this deals with this 20-year lease, allowing the 20-year lease for a proposed steel mill in Itasca County. Under current law, they can, I guess, 15 years for a tailings basin and maybe 10 years for other purposes. But this says that they can have the lease for 20 years. And then you've got the tax forfeited land in Crow Wing County. Those were added to Senator Saxhog's bill in committee, but they are part of Senate File 1119 as it sits right now. I just wanted to point out that those were added later. Section 37, again, these are tax forfeited provisions in Dakota and Lake County. And then Section 39, this was from Senator Boxville originally, but it is also included in Senate File 119 as it is on the floor right now on the Claire Nelson Memorial Forest, allowing them to retain the net proceeds. Again, this was discussed extensively by the committee. And then you can see The effective date applies to those DNR sections earlier. That is Article 4.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, not being on the land subcommittee anymore, I'm curious if somebody from DNR can tell me where those the Hennepin County lands that are up for sale are located.
Page 15.
Did the land subcommittee have testimony on this?
Mr. Chairman, yeah, I mean, there was limited. This was actually part of the original DNR bill, so okay. This was not a separate provision. It was part of the bill that was brought to us by the department. This is the department's surplus land in Hennepin County.
And then did we hear this provision in full committee when it was it Senator Saxog's
bill? Yes, Mr. Chairman, Senate File 1119.
Okay. Senator Olson, why don't we have Bob Meyer answer your question, but I really am not taking testimony on bills that we've already heard, but as courtesy, we'll
Mr. Chairman, I'm not asking for testimony. Yeah. I was just asking for where it is. The Township 120, since we don't have any townships left in Hennepin County, which city is it in?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, I don't have that information in front of me. All of the pieces that are in the land sales bill are non-controversial and came to us through the counties. We've reviewed them. They were discussed in the subcommittee. If you give me a couple minutes, I can find out and let you know.
Somebody knows that it doesn't have to be in committee hearing either.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Knopf.
And Mr. Chairman, I was finished with the description of Article 4.
Okay. Is that all the articles?
No. Article 5.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ingebretson.
Could I ask one question about Article 2?
Sure.
Mr. Chair, members, it has been brought to my attention that Senator Anderson had talked about Section 9, page 6, forest traditional areas. It was discussed apparently in her committee with regards to allowing handicapped people this particular, having it, acknowledging them in this particular statute. You know, does anybody know anything about that?
Senator Ingebrigtsen, I'm not focusing on the nub of your question. However, we did have the testimony from the Capable Partners group that had concerns with the state forest traditional areas because they felt that it would reduce access to their hunting ability to hunt. It was my opinion that the traditional areas that we're looking to set up here are going to be a fairly small part of our state forest, given the amount of trails to ATVs that already exist and will exist. So there's going to be the vast majority of our state forests are going to be accessible to everyone. Having said that, we have amended this portion to allow the department greater flexibility in establishing these traditional areas so that it addresses issues that the Capable Partners brought up. For example, on page 6, this change was not part of it, of the bill previously. Is Mr. Bow in the room? Can someone check to see if he's out in the hall? Mr. Meyer, can you answer this? Or Mr. Potter, one of the two?
Mr. Mr. Chair.
The discussion, do you understand the question?
The access in the traditional forest area?
Yeah, and how did we alter this portion to be a little bit more flexible on that concern? Could you explain that?
Mr. Chair, members, the language that was in 1538 required that they not be on any forest roads. In our discussions with the chair and other members, that would limit our ability to create larger traditional areas because many of them have a forest road that's used as a travel route for people who live within that forest and people who need to go from one side to the other. We would close one side of the road or the other. The language that's in the bill says they cannot depart off of state forest roads. We also have an exception by permit allowed to us in 84.926, where on a case-by-case basis, the commissioner may issue a permit. So we would be working with people such as capable partners, people who need an exemption or an exception to the current rule. We would allow them. We have the flexibility to work with, on a case-by-case basis, people to allow them the ability to enter into the forest.
Where's that forest road part? In the
what?
In the in Article 2.
It's sub 3, vehicle restrictions.
I just need a copy of Article 2.
Sub 3?
Okay, yeah. Senator Ingebrigtsen, 6.9, 6.10. So we've added the ability, even in a traditional forest area, that anyone can go down, go through it if it's a forest road.
Mr. Chair, members, the language in Section 9 of this bill kind of clarifies our abilities right now, our authorities. It allows us the ability to create these areas. It clearly defines what uses can be used and the restrictions within them. So understanding your question, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I believe we have the ability to deal with those issues with this language.
But we've also made sure in statute that there's additional flexibility. Follow-up?
It's just a follow-up then. So what, am I to understand that they have to go through the permitting process then? Is that what you said earlier or not?
Or Mr. Chair, members, to go off of this road or to... If you look at 84.926, and the head note is vehicle use on public lands exceptions, the commissioner has the authority on a case-by-case basis to issue permits to a person to operate an OHV on individual public trails under the commissioner's jurisdictions during specified times. If a person needed an access route, perhaps, if you had a cabin in one of these areas and it didn't allow for a traditional trail to be there, we would give them a permit to get in there. If a person, because of a disability, needed to have access or wanted to get into the woods to enjoy outdoor activities, we would be able to work with them. But it would be on a case-by-case basis. You're correct.
If it's not on a forest road, these forest roads are kind of all over.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
So, Senator Olson.
Well, so, Mr. Chairman, so this language on 6.9 and 6.10 doesn't negate your ability to put the permits in, because this is pretty negative. Doesn't seem to be flexible. It says that you can't do it. Mm-hmm. Therefore, in the current law or under your current handbook, you can in fact, on a case basis, ignore this new language.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, I need to go back and double check that and work with Senate Counsel and staff. As we put Chapter 89 together and as we've amended 84, it's really becoming kind of overlaid with everything. So I need to go back and double check that. If we need to change it, I think it's the committee's intent that we aren't prohibiting that. I will come back with some recommended language for that as well.
Mr. Knopf.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. I think it would be good to cross-reference, as Senator Olson points out, because if you read that section, it says, notwithstanding 84.773 sub 1, 84.77, on a case, the commissioner may issue a permit. So it does refer to specific sections that it's bypassing, and this is not listed among those sections because it's new. And so I think it would be a good idea to have a cross-reference in here to that section. So that, to make it very clear that the department has that authority.
Mr. Chairman, could you Mr. Knott, would you prepare that amendment for Mr. Ingebrigtsen or myself?
Mr. Chair, these are working documents right now. I'll just put it in.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, if that's... Yeah.
Sure.
If everybody agrees, instead of drawing up a whole amendment to it.
Whatever.
Senator Perestrello.
In fact, Mr. Chairman, I believe that in the past, line 613, this is a reversal of some past usages. And it's very prescriptive as well as the line we were just discussing. So I would think that, I'm not sure if Mr. Myers, whether line 613 is also subject to a special permit, because we did say that, you know, people trying to pull a large animal out after would be able to use an ATV in order to help it get out, and including trappers where they have probably multiple beaver or something very heavy. Anything large and heavy. So this is kind of a reversal of past usages, and I'm just wondering whether we should.
Senator Perestrello, remember this is only
option for that.
Remember this proposal is only for those smaller set aside areas that we said are traditional areas. The vast majority of the non traditional areas will have the ability for someone to retrieve their deer or whatever from with an ATV.
But Mr. Chairman, the top paragraph definition includes those very activities, who are the ones that had exceptions in the past for use of an ATV to pull things out that were very heavy. Not typically something you'd do on foot. So you're including them in that paragraph, but at the bottom then they can't use the machine to do it.
Well, Senator Perestrello,
so it's sort of
Senator Perestrello, I've never not retrieved a deer on foot. I've never used an ATV to retrieve a deer. I think it's fairly common practice, but you know, we're just saying for one smaller area of the state forest that we have this traditional area, and for the vast majority of all the forests, you'll be able to use your ATV, and the ATV, the hunting retrieval exception will apply.
So, Mr. Chairman, what you're saying is that those traditional areas in a small area are for the purists that don't think that you should do it. I mean, that you believe you ought to do it the old way.
Senator Olson, correct.
All right, that's what.
Correct.
Don't want to get any heavy beaver and try to put them in
your
backpack.
Are we ready to move on to Article 5?
Yes, we are.
Any other questions on those articles? We move on to Article 5.
Yeah. How far back is traditional? The arrowheads?
Mr. Chair, I believe this has been passed out, and I can go through it to number 5. You're ready.
Go ahead.
Article 5, wetlands conservation, is basically the majority of Senate File 1137, which was Senator Chaudhry's wetlands bill. Notably, there are some sections that have been dropped out. The exemptions that involved agriculture land, the agricultural activities exemption, the drainage exemption involving ag land has just been dropped out of this article. The language allowing Bowser to issue administrative penalty orders has been dropped out.
Mr. Chairman, just kind of a procedural question here. Isn't your bill in the Ag Committee?
It is.
And what is it doing here?
Senator Stump, the sections that are unrelated to agriculture are here in the omnibus bill.
Well, Section 5 relates to agriculture.
Senator Stump, don't believe so. I mean, all of this agriculture is dealt with the entire agricultural exemption, and my original bill did deal with the agricultural exemption, but this does not now.
So, Mr. Chairman, maybe we could have Mr. Knopf talk about, is there anything in this proposal here that has an impact on agricultural land?
Well, Mr. Knopf. Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, I mean, the de minimis potentially could. Now, you got to remember the de minimis can't be used in addition to another exemption. So if you're using an ag exemption for something, you can't add on to it with a de minimis. But if there wasn't another exemption, I suppose a farmer could use this for a driveway or something like that. But it isn't tied directly to agriculture. This is broader than that. It's everything. I think that would be, you know, the only other one that's potentially is on 3.25 to 3.26. And it doesn't clearly say it in there because it says activities exempted from federal regulation under United States Code Title 33. That provision relates to there's some under the Corps of Engineers for filling. There's a general exemption, and included in that is normal farming practices. And so by eliminating it here, you don't pick up that federal exemption that was in effect on July 1, 1991 for normal farming practices. That would be the only other one that I'm aware of that would still be, you could still consider to be at least related to agriculture.
Is that with regards to the entire paragraph, or is there something in there?
It's
which code are we striking here that it deals with agriculture?
It's 3.25 to 3.26, clause 1.
Oh, okay.
Right. Clause 2 is being stricken, as I understand it. This just doesn't work anymore. This dealt with the trying to do the general permits with the Corps of Engineers, and that's more of a technical. But clause 1 is a little more substantive in that there are some provisions in normal farming practices in the federal code that this would not include anymore.
Sounds like that was an oversight on my part.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bickerman.
I'm going to ask you a procedural question. This bill is in ag committee right now. And it's sitting in ag. I offered to hear the bill, and the author didn't want me to hear the bill, or he didn't want to present his bill. So I'm trying to figure out, is that the way it works? Can you just take something out of a bill that's sitting in another committee and do it your own way? I'm just asking for an explanation.
Senator Bickerman, this bill is not in your committee. Senate File 1538 is in your committee. That has completely different content. Well, not completely different, but a very different content than this
and
article.
This is a no net loss. Right.
Correct. Okay. I have agreed not to pursue the agricultural provisions of my bill. I thought there were concerns over it. And so, like I've been doing all along in all of our hearings and all of my discussions, I've been listening hard to people and their concerns. And so I dropped the agricultural provisions. And so I did. I don't know why we would need to hear it in agriculture.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask the consul. There's got to be more to this bill. There's all kinds of sizes, normal practices, and everything else in the other bill. Is that not in here then?
Question, Ms. Baker?
I don't care who answers. I'd like somebody.
Well, could you repeat the question, please?
Well, my question is, the de minimis, that was different. Normal farming practices was in the other bill. I don't see that in here unless I can't find it.
Mr. Chair and Senator, that's correct. This is just a collection of some of the sections that were in that bill, but not all of them. This doesn't have the ag exemptions in it. It doesn't have the administrative penalty order language in it, but it has some others that are like the sections in there, but this is not the complete bill. This is not 1137.
Oh, 1137. It's not 1538.
It's 1137.
Oh, I'm sorry. 1137.
It's not 1137. It's pieced together sections from 1137, which do not include the ag exemptions and APO and just the big ones, mm-hmm. I think, mainly.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to ask the Senate counsel one more time. The bill sets in another committee. Most of what you have put in this committee, a lot of it. Can you do that when the most of this bill sets in another committee? Is that standard procedure?
Mr. Chair, members, this is a committee bill that the committee is building from scratch. It's we put in an awful lot of what we've already heard, some changes, some things are put in, some weren't, but this is a bill from scratch that tomorrow can be amended and finally voted on to be recommended to be introduced as its own bill. So it's not, you can do it, yes. It's not that uncommon to put different things into an omnibus bill, have everyone, you know, read it, agree or disagree, vote things in or out, and then either pass it or not on to be either a committee report to finance or something or to be introduced on the floor. So
and all,
there wasn't anything out of line.
All of these provisions have been passed by this committee as well as the State and Local Government Committee, because these provisions, these are the only provisions that relate to environment and state and local government, and they passed both committees. Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I think part of the issue here is that you've had your bill in the Ag Committee, I think, for a couple of weeks or so, and you've asked for a hearing for a couple of weeks. And we knew we were going to be assembling this omnibus bill here for weeks. And we had, you know, several opportunities to have a hearing in Senator Bickerman's committee, but we never got to it for whatever reason. And now we're here on Friday's. The deadline is, I guess, Saturday, but Friday is tomorrow when we're going to assemble this whole bill. And we've got a – clearly you've been working hard on this wetlands bill. You've compromised a lot on it. It belongs in this omnibus bill, and it's too bad we didn't have a hearing in the Ag Committee. I wish we could have had one or would have had one. But what I'm wondering about, I think there's some elements in this wetland bill that deals with agriculture that really should be in here. And I'm just wondering if tomorrow, maybe I can ask Senator Bickerman also, but if we had some amendments tomorrow that dealt with agriculture to put into Senator Satvir Chaudhary's bill, would you be willing to not ask for this whole omnibus bill to come to your committee?
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Bickerman.
I didn't quite follow what you were.
Well, I think Senator Chaudhary's got an ominous bill that we've got to get together by tomorrow, and we've had 2 weeks to have hearings on the wetland part in your committee, and that hasn't happened. And I believe there's some parts of this wetland bill that deals with agriculture that should be in this bill and move forward into conference committee and off the Senate floor and so forth, establish a Senate position on some of this stuff. So if we had some amendments tomorrow that dealt with agriculture and wetlands put into this omnibus bill, I guess that's what I would like to do, and then not have it go to your committee because it's getting too late for that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dill, boss of the bill, doesn't want the bill heard in my committee, so I can't force someone else there to have a hearing in my ag bill, which that's going to be in about a half hour. So I it's out of my hands.
Mr.
I guess,
Chair.
I'll get to you in a second, Senator Stump. I guess I'm curious, when is Senate File 1137 scheduled for your committee, and when did that notice go out?
You were notified this morning, just like a lot of other ones, and that was time enough.
I was notified this morning. Thank you. Senator Stump.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't think that the deadline, even though the deadline is supposedly tomorrow, I mean, that doesn't mean that the policy committee can't pass legislation. It just means that it goes to the rules committee and then gets acted on. And we've done that time and time again, year after year. So I do think that this is an issue that we had a lot of discussion on, and there's a lot of controversy about wetlands and whether this is acceptable to the county commissioners up in Kitson County or Kuchiching County that came down and testified, all the other people, I don't know. I mean, I think there are some real concerns on the part of the local units of government up in northern Minnesota. And we have to admit that wetlands in northern Minnesota, or northern Minnesota is where the impact of changes are going to be felt the greatest. Normal farming practices in southern Minnesota is one thing. Farming practices in northern Minnesota is a whole different thing. Where are the counties that have the wetlands? It's basically the northern third of the state. So to know whether our local units of government are acceptable with something like this, I don't know. I mean, I'll get on the telephone and start calling, but mm-hmm. but I think it's a little bit of a disservice, I think, to have that, you know, as part of an omnibus bill when it's such a big issue by itself. Yeah, you and I sat on that conference committee for a year, was it 2.5 years, trying to solve some of the issues in wetlands. And it was a very finely balanced bill when we finally got an acceptable package put together. And you know how many kind of head-knocking sessions we had. I don't want to go home and have hundreds of telephone calls saying, what the hell did you do?
I guess I'm confounded. About we what? Had in this committee no less than 4 complete hearings on wetlands where we heard from anybody who wanted to speak on the wetland issue, including representatives from northern counties. In fact, they were speaking at the first hearing, and they spoke at subsequent hearings as well. And we met. I don't know if they've conveyed to you, but we have met with them and accommodated their concerns. So to say that we're doing something that people don't know about, aside from dedicated funding, we have spent the most amount of time on wetlands in this committee, this session. There is no secret about what we are doing. And we have been assertive about our desire to do something on wetlands and let everybody know and work with everyone who wanted to on these issues. And it worked. It worked because we came to a lot of understandings. I learned a lot from the Builders Association about the Builders Association of Minnesota, about the way they conduct their business and their operations within the wetlands. So we changed what we were doing. I agreed with their concerns. I agreed, and so we changed it. We heard from Northern County Commissioners who talked about 90% of their pre-settlement, having 90% of the pre-settlement wetlands north of Highway 2. So we changed that. Look. We changed that on page 5. We are also heard other concerns regarding wetlands that were not part of what I was proposing that we also included, including concerns about the flexibility of wetland banking, and we have added flexibilities to wetland banking. We have also added provisions that allow Northeast Minnesota to do its own plan. They've been working on a separate plan that deals with Northeast Minnesota. Environmentalists don't want that, but this was an issue of understanding that we came to. Those are just a few examples, Senator Stubb, and I don't see where the concern is about process, because this is the most open process of any piece of legislation this committee has had this entire session. And we continue to listen and compromise. I heard that there were concerns over the agricultural provisions. Okay. Let's set those aside, and we'll continue to work on them. We'll continue to work on them.
Mr. Chairman,
and so
you
I was,
pointed out several. You just said several things.
Yeah.
But could you point them out? Those
we
pages?
Will. We will. But
you said just page five.
Senator Olson, before Ms. Baker was allowed the chance to go through this article, these questions came up. So I'm answering them now. I'm answering them now. And then we'll go through the rest of the article. Again, no one will not understand what's in this bill. I've agreed to accommodate concerns. Remember, we started this bill with a civil right of action, citizen enforcement. Remember that the wetland SWAT team that was so outrageous? You're right. It is. So we changed that. But people didn't like penalties at all. We weren't ready for penalties yet. So we took out the administrative penalty order as well.
Yes, he is.
I'm going to say this because it is a matter of record in this committee and in the state and local government committee that Senator Vickerman, you indicated quite clearly that you wanted to see this bill, but you were not going to kill it. You said you were not going to kill this bill. And now I hear at 2:15 that you sent out a notice this morning that you're going to hear the bill this afternoon. Well, I'm sorry, but if the agricultural provisions of this bill are that big of a concern, I respect you. I respect you enough that I won't pursue them. As far as process is concerned, there is nothing that's been more orderly, more open, more in construct with the process this body has. So you can imagine my confoundment when we say this is not the appropriate place for this type of bill. We have laid over, the only thing we did not, we have laid over every single bill that did not have to go to another committee or did not have money in it. And we have, and many of those bills, according to the requests of members, we have included in this omnibus bill. And this is no different. Do we want to go through the article, or do we want to talk about process more? If you got more process comments or questions, we're happy to do that. Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would like to go on record as saying that I think you've done a very good job with process. I think you've included everybody. You've had many public hearings here. You've listened to everybody. And I've been impressed with how you've changed this bill to try to accommodate the many competing interests and disagreements that arose during the last session. So I just want to publicly acknowledge, from my point of view, I think you've done a good job, and thank you for it.
Now, maybe council can answer whether it's okay for a committee chair to request a bill that has no jurisdiction in their committee. How does that work? Why don't we go through the article? Unless there are more process issues, why don't we go through the article and take a look at what's in the bill? Discuss it. If you got an issue with the content, let's talk about it. We've been doing that this entire session. Explain your concerns. We'll go over them. Just like we've done from the beginning. Ms. Baker.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Member, Section 1 is the referred to as the 60-day rules section. It amends the statute to specify that an agency response, including
an approval with condition does meet the 60-day time limit. Failure to satisfy any of the conditions, however, can be a basis to revoke or rescind approval by the agency and doesn't give rise to a claim that the 60-day time limit was not met without recommendation. The Section 2 is the wetland replacement siting, and it reorganizes wetland replacement siting provisions in the different areas into more than 80% area, the less than 80% area. This language was exactly as it was discussed in committee. The Section 3, which we talked a little bit about, the federal exemptions. Is it my understanding that we shall reinstate the stricken language on the one that may have some agricultural implications? This.
I'll take a look at that.
Okay.
I'll take a look at that.
And the other one is basically unworkable, obsolete language. Section 4 rewrites the public utilities exception. Public works exemption. Section 5 is the de minimis exemptions, and those changes were thoroughly discussed and haven't changed here in this article. Section 6 is where exemption requires Bowser to develop rules that address the application implementation of exemptions and that provide for estimates and reporting of exempt wetland impacts. Section 7 authorizes Bowser to establish a wetland delineator certification program. Section 8 allows 30 days for local appeals on boundary determinations. And Section 9 authorizes Bowser to establish fees for appeals of restoration orders, and it allows them to establish a fee schedule for appeals not to exceed $1,000. And it deletes the local government authority to require a $500 fee for appeals to Bowser. Section 10 rewrites to make it more clear the stormwater ponds exception, and you'll see that in section or in paragraph or clause 4 rather, that starts at the bottom of page 9.31. It rewrites it to say water quality treatment ponds that include pretreatment of runoff and function as a wetland would be allowable in the replacement credits. So, just technical. And section 12 deals with just more of the delineation changes. Section 13, rulemaking, requires Bowser to adopt rules that amend Chapter 8420 to incorporate statute changes and to address related wetland provisions. And these are exempt from Chapter 14 rulemaking will be the proposed rules that they come up with will be submitted to the legislative committees with jurisdiction over environment and natural resources at least a month before being published in the State Register. And Section 14 is just repealing an obsolete approved development exemption.
Okay. Any questions on Article 5? Senator Stahl.
Mr. Chairman, why are we exempting rules under Chapter 14 here and some of the other articles were requiring them to go through rulemaking procedures?
Which page are you on?
Page 11.
Line 14, I think.
And I know we had this discussion in one of your hearings.
Yes.
And it seemed to me that in order to get the public participation from the local units of government, it would be good to have go through the full-blown public hearing process.
The
rulemaking.
The testimony from Bowser on this language, and we did discuss this, was that in the past when they have implemented our WACA rules, they have needed this ability to implement what we pass. They've needed this exemption to implement what we pass, as opposed to going through 2 years of rulemaking just to implement what we pass. Now, the original bill had a more expansive ability for rulemaking or exemption from rulemaking on things that were not in this bill, and that was pointed out by I can't remember who pointed it. I think it might have been one of the Mr. Carlson from the Intercounty Association, and we agreed that was problematic, and we removed that. But this type of exemption is commensurate with what we've done in the past with any changes we've implemented.
Mr. Chairman, let me be the devil's advocate a little bit. Chapter 14 is a procedure that basically is put in place to solicit the kind of input into rulemaking that this legislative body has worked with for years and years and years. And I get not nervous just about this exemption from rulemaking, but any exemption from rulemaking, because then the agencies, they may say that they have, public input, but they're not going through the full Chapter 14 process. And I realize it's more expensive, and I realize it takes more time, but it is the accepted process when you're dealing with issues that have a certain level of controversy.
Fair enough. But the question that is answered by this rule is what public input are you trying to seek when they're just simply putting into rule what we have adopted in statute? That's all this provision does. And if you can see anywhere where it goes beyond that, that is not my intent. I'm willing to change it. But and if there's language in here that can assure what I'm saying that we can add, I'm happy to do that too. But we're not intending to go beyond putting into rule we're putting in statute with this bill. What Bowser indicates is that the people who operate under WACA use the rule. They don't go back and read the statute that we passed. They go directly to the rules that Bowser has. And so Bowser needs to put those rules in right away, partly because of the convenience of the people who use WACA. Otherwise, they'll just have to go to statute and for the next 2 years.
To that point?
Senator Olson.
The wording here is a little bit confusing. And on line 11, Bowser shall adopt rules to amend rules to incorporate the statute changes, which is what you've just been stating, and to address the related wetland exemption provisions in the rule. Now, what wetland exemption provisions, if they're already in rule, are they going to address, or are they the ones that you're proposing to have changed here so that we really don't want to say and? Maybe they're just to incorporate statute changes to address the related wetland exemption provisions? Or what? There's some wording here that seems to say that it opens a door to changing something changing the rule regarding something that's already in the rule and the wetland replacement and banking provision. I don't understand that.
Is this a
reception conference?
Mr. Chair, the line about addressing the related wetland exemption provisions, so I think that the intent was that it would be more technical and would follow the anything that was in the statute, okay. The parts that we.
All right.
Senator Olson, we'll circle this and
for clarification
and make sure it's clear for tomorrow. Senator Parasol.
Mr. Chairman, going back to the Chapter 14 section here, the point is that the Chapter 14 is written to make sure that the public is not only notified and are able to have a period of time when they may comment in any particular way that's best for them in a time period, and then you have fulfilled the intention of Chapter 14 at a certain point. However, if they're exempt from Chapter 14, there's no provision to know for sure that the public at all levels was able to know that they were capable of commenting or being present to hear things going on in their own time. I think that to go around Chapter 14 is to make a big boo-boo here.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Parasol, I do understand that if the rules that they now hold are inconsistent with the law changes, law should supersede the rules, and they're saying go back and bring the rules up to date to fit what we did in statute.
There
that are not clear to me whether they are just doing things that we've done with these changes or if there's something else.
Re-referencing them.
And if that was the case, then I don't think you would need to go through that whole process. If it's just making them consistent and not confusing to people to have, say, go look at the rules and say they're different from what the law is.
Statutory.
Now, which, since they have the force and effect of law, you know, how do we reconcile them if we don't get them straightened out quickly? At least around the same time that the law goes into effect.
Council indicates to me that that these two lines
just the higher
indeed
power.
Could be interpreted in an open way, and so that they probably needed tightening up.
Okay.
Senator Dill?
Well, Mr. Chairman, how many more articles do we have?
This is it.
No, three.
Three more?
We have three more?
Three more.
Oh, okay.
Well, I suggest we quit talking about this one and get on with the rest of it.
All right. Are there any other questions?
Thank you.
What are we doing? By three? The next committee meets at 3. Which articles do we have left?
I don't mind.
Mr. Chairman, did you want me to go through Article 6 quickly?
What is that?
It's the environmental policy.
Okay.
And Mr. Chairman, I think the last two articles weren't just bills, basically, that didn't fit in anywhere else. So they're turned into articles just for the purposes of this bill. So we can do this quickly. The Article 6, Environmental Policy, this is from Senator Dibble's bill from yesterday. It's basically the way the committee adopted it. So that you'll see that in sections 1 and 2. Section 3, this deals with the, this was Senator Sparks' bill dealing with the design and of ISTS systems. The committee discussed this and laid it over and talked about a report and some other issues, and then also limiting the time period. So that's what this does, is it limits the time period that this is going to be available until through 2010.
Yeah.
And then you'll see later on there's a report required on ISTS licensing for those people who design, install, inspect, or operate those with a flow of less than 10,000 gallons. Section 4 is also Senator Sparks' bill that dealt with noise at racetracks. This just incorporates the change on the date and not the other provisions that were in Senator Sparks' original bill. Section 5, this is from Senator Saxhog's bill dealing with dishwasher detergent, and this was heard in committee and set aside, and that's just the way it is. Section 6 is from Senator Langseth's bill dealing with the phosphorus rule. This was the way it was amended, by just extending that prohibition for another year. Section 7, as I mentioned earlier, this is the ISTS licensing report that goes along with the provisions from Senator Sparks' bill that requires a report by February 15, 2008 on that topic. Section 8, Senator Skoy had a bill in dealing with biofuel permitting. This is a biofuel permitting report that was requested in that bill. This is the way the committee adopted an amendment to it. Section 9, Senator Torres-Ray bill dealing with endocrine disruptors, and that was heard just the other day, in fact, yesterday in committee. This is the way the committee amended that provision. And Section 10, this is a repeal of the offset provision that was passed in last year's Clean Water Legacy Act. And this goes along with the phosphorus provision from Senator Langseth's bill. And Mr. Chairman, you have two more articles, and I didn't get copies of those. Article 7 and Article 8. And Article 7 is from the Community Forestry Bill of Senator Sharon's that was passed on from this committee. It's basically the way the committee adopted it. It would just be included as a separate article. This was an agency bill transferring authority for community forestry from ag over to DNR. Again, it was one that the agencies agreed on. Article 8 is from Senator Sparks' drainage buffer bill. It's going to be heard in Senator Vickerman's committee in a few minutes here. But this is basically the language that's in front of Senator Vickerman's committee without the appropriations. This bill was heard in this committee, and this is the way the bill left the committee.
And we put this in anticipating that this would pass the Ag Committee, but if it does not, we will not have it in here.
And, Mr. Chairman, that's the end of that's Articles 6, 7, and 8.
Okay. Is there any questions on either of these? We'll take the actual votes on these articles tomorrow, so you've got plenty of time to prepare any amendments if you like. If we get done in the next 2 minutes, I don't think we need to meet tonight.
Right.
Mr. Urban, will you come up here for a minute? Senate File 1764. Could you just give us 1 minute?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Edmond. I'm Director of Explore Minnesota Tourism. The concept of this bill is to help recognize tourism businesses that undergo practices to protect the environment. Mr. Chair, we're currently working with the University of Minnesota now. We put together a survey just recently. We're looking at the results of that. We're having a sustainable tourism conference next week, and also even looking at an awards program to recognize those businesses that undertake practices to protect the environment. Personally, I'm very supportive of this measure. Mr. Chairman, we're already, however, doing some of the activities that's called for in this bill, and I'm willing to work with you, Mr. Chairman, and members to make sure that this becomes a reality, whether the bill becomes into law or not.
Okay. Would this bill cost any money?
No, it would not.
Okay. There's just one thing I wanted to add. It's really a great discussion. We're not giving justice to this. But I just wanted to add another stakeholder to this. There's a strong movement in rural Minnesota for rural green tourism, and so I'd like to include there's a group, a nonprofit called Renewing the Countryside.
Oh, okay.
That deals specifically with rural green travels, and I think that's an important aspect, particularly in Minnesota. So if Senator Fredrickson, would you move just adding Renewing
the Chairman,
Countryside?
Mr. Chairman, I will.
So does everyone understand the amendment, Council?
Yes.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. Are there any questions? I think we this needs to go to Commerce anyway. Senator Scogin, would you move that Senate file 1764 be, as amended, be recommended to pass?
So moved.
And re-referred to the Committee on Commerce.
So moved.
So moved. Anyone understand the motion? Does anyone want to testify against this bill?
Not against. Just real quickly, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
The Department of Natural Resources, it's not clear to us what is meant by environmental impacts. If it's pollution prevention, reduction, recycling, that's primarily done through the Pollution Control Agency. I think we deal with environmental ecological impacts.
Okay.
And talking with the department, if we're looking at waste reduction, pollution prevention, recycling, and then maybe shoreland, there should be other stakeholders in conjunction with the department. We have no expertise on those waste reduction activities, so okay. Just something for the committee to think about.
All right. We'll improve the verbiage as this moves along. All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. So we'll when do we meet tomorrow? At 10?
9.
Okay. So we're adjourned until 9 a.m. tomorrow.
Oh, God.